Okay, good evening, everyone. The first test is, can you actually hear me at the back there? Yes, good. Thank you very much. That's good. Welcome to the 2026 AGM for the David Lean Cinema. My name, for anyone who doesn't know me, is Alan Shillabeer, and I am the secretary to the cinema. And as you probably know already, joined on my immediate left by Andy, our treasurer, and to his left by Sam, our chair. So before we properly kick off proceedings, can I just say how pleasing it is to see you all here this evening with the counter attractions of the World Cup. The World Cup and the first day of Wimbledon, so we haven't done bad really for this sort of turnout. Experimentally this year we brought the AGM forward to June rather than September as we've done in the past. And the reason for that really is just to make it a bit more immediate, because obviously we're talking about the previous financial year, so 2024-2025. So events which took place at the start of that financial year are already, you know, 14 months ago, and if we wait until September, are almost ancient history, and of some instances have been largely overtaken by subsequent events. So, as I say, we're delighted to have you here with us this evening. Not only for us to share with you what's been going on at the cinema in the last year, but also an opportunity for you to give us your ideas and suggestions and ask any questions, make any comments. And there will be, we don't have the agenda up yet, but we will do, an opportunity for that towards the end. So that's what we have in store for the evening. Some of it may look interesting. Some of it may look less interesting, but we'll try and make the less interesting bits as interesting as we possibly can. Can't promise it'll be riveting, but we'll see what happens. The relevant documents for the evening, so Sam's chair's report and Andy's treasurer's report and the accounts for 2025-6. That's right, isn't it? Yeah, sorry. I think I said 2025-6. The accounts are on the AGM page on the website if you want to go and have a look at them. I think we can move on. I think that's the introduction. The first thing from me is one innovation which we shared last year and the previous year was that each of us sitting up here shared with you our three favourite films screened at the cinema over the past year. So we're going to do that again, because it seemed quite popular. We like to delight our audience here at the David Lean, so we'll try and delight you once more this evening. So in a while, Andy and Sam will share their three favourite films, but first of all, it's my turn. So what are they? We'll see how these chime with your own favourites. Obviously, I actually found it quite difficult to identify these because there have been a lot of really good films on this year, as other years, of course. Three for your delectation. One of them is among our top 10 box office films for the year, and Sam will share all 10 of those with you in a little while. No prizes for guessing which one is in the top 10. So we'll talk about that one first. So the one that needs least introduction is the one in the middle there, Mr. Burton. I'm sure a film which many of you will have seen. But for anyone who hasn't seen it, the film tells the true story of the early life of Richard Burton, or Richard Jenkins as he was then, before he was adopted by his teacher, mentor, and then adoptive father, played by the ever-reliable Toby Jones. Burton's played by Harry Lawty, who I think did a brilliant job of it and succeeded in erasing from my mind some of the images which were seared on my retina of his performance in the BBC series Industry, which, if any of you have seen, you'll know what I mean. If you haven't seen it, go and find it on iPlayer. But be warned, it's quite risque, graphic, yes, graphic indeed. So that's that one. Interestingly, I asked ChatGPT when I was preparing for this evening to whether Richard Burton had any connections to Croydon so that I could dazzle you with my knowledge of trivia. Sadly, he doesn't. There we are. My other two choices may be less familiar to you. So Death, or Sorda, to give it its Spanish title, is a film which sort of navigates the challenges and alienation faced by a deaf mother in a hearing family. Those challenges she faces throughout her pregnancy and then subsequently beyond as she copes with a partner who is not hearing impaired and a child who is not hearing impaired, and the way in which she navigates her way through the world. And I think what particularly impressed me about it was that the film sort of exposes and explores the sort of relationship challenges and the tensions without being sort of patronising or preachy about it. And then my final choice, The President's Cake. So this is probably my favourite among the favourites. I don't know whether many of you have seen that, but this is also in a way a film which explores alienation. A young girl, 9 years old, Lamia, in early 1990s Iraq, so when the Saddam Hussein regime was facing international sanctions after they wandered into Kuwait and when they kicked out again. So Lamia has the unwanted distinction of being nominated by her school to bake a cake in honour of the president's birthday. Despite the international sanctions that are in place, which means that most of the ingredients that she needs to bake that cake are completely unavailable. It's a very atmospheric film, particularly in the way it portrays life in the southern marshlands of Iraq. And I've been to Iraq, so I kind of know a bit about it. It's also uplifting in the way that Lamia uses considerable ingenuity and persistence in getting hold of the ingredients she needs to bake the cake and then baking the cake itself. But it's also ultimately shocking, not least in what The Guardian review described as the explosively important climax of the cake tasting. So I leave that to your imagination. It was a debut film by an Iraqi filmmaker, Hassan Hadi, which I think makes it all the more remarkable. And the cast were largely non-professionals. It was a really, really good film. So if you get a chance to see it and you haven't, I heartily recommend it. And I think that's it for now. Although I'll be coming back to bore you a bit more later. For now, I'll hand over to Sam to do her chair's report.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Can I just grab the clicker? You would never bore us, Alan. Never bore us. I'll stand up because I'm very short and you might not see me if I don't. And I've been given the ridiculous microphone always, so that I always get this Madonna microphone, and that's where the resemblance begins and ends. Anyway, so nice to see everybody. A lot of you, and thankfully the weather is kinder today. And so it's great to see as many of you as are here. So welcome. First, I would like to start by talking about people and the people who have formal or informal roles that make this place run. Because that's really our most important asset, really, to be honest. So first of all, the committee. Hopefully you can see those beautiful faces on the committee. Since January, some more beautiful than others. Since January, I've been chair, which has been fun, with Alan as secretary and Andy as treasurer, who are here. Andy will later talk about our proposals for appointments and committee members going forward. So I won't do that. But I think the first and important thing to mention is a couple of key changes from last year and this slide last year, which you'll obviously be, most of you will be aware of. Firstly, and very sadly, you'll be aware of the sudden death of our colleague Janet Smith in February of this year. And as well as being a director of the cinema, she held a project role on the committee, which meant that she had an overarching responsibility for community work as well as liaison with the culture team at the council and also the BFI. She was also a long-standing member of the programming team and a projectionist, so she did a huge amount for the cinema. And for those of us who got to know Janet over the years, we'll remember her as somebody who cared about people, who wanted to make a difference in the local community, and fundamentally, quite simply, she loved the cinema. We were lucky to have her on the team for as long as we did, and she will be much missed. So I think it's important to recognise her absence from this slide today. Folks on this slide are a new face for some of you. I would like to introduce you to Louise Goff. You may recall that she provided a maternity cover last year for Caroline, who was on mat leave as an admin assistant. And during that period, she demonstrated a keen interest in the cinema and how we run, and particularly outreach, so working and liaising with our communities. So she has been invited and she has accepted to take up an outreach role on the committee, and she started doing that role in April. And you see her here on this slide. So welcome, Louise. She's making a big difference already, and we're very much appreciative of her involvement. These are other members of the committee. These some new faces on here. George Phillips on the left has joined us as a fundraising officer. He's got a fundraising background, and he's new to the team. And is already starting to really investigate some of the grants that might be available to us and making good progress in terms of that investigation and then targeting the right ones. Michael Snowden continues on as a box office manager, and Malini and Sharon are our new joint bar managers. I see Sharon here. Louise is at the back there, if anybody's interested in what Louise. So these committee members can be invited to attend the formal main committee meetings as and when necessary, but they're not formally required to attend each month. I also wanted to... there's some seats here. I also wanted to acknowledge the contribution that our previous bar manager, Mina Joshi, made to the running of the bar. Mina stood down from her role as bar manager at the end of last year, and she affected a transition with the team in the early part of this year, and we were very grateful to her and remain grateful to her for all hard work and dedication to that role, and wish her very much very well for the future. So those are the folks on the committee. We do have a small number of employees, okay? So these are people who are on very limited hours contracts, and there are five of them in key roles that are necessary to keep the place running. You'll see that Caroline has come back to the team as an admin assistant. She was the lady on maternity leave. And that's the one change that you see on this slide. Those are the five people who are on payroll, and that payroll will the cost of that will be covered by Andy in his section. Directors. These are the five directors. This remains unchanged, apart from the absence of Janet on this slide for the reasons that I mentioned earlier. But those are the formal roles that it takes to run the cinema. In terms of other volunteer roles, I mean, to be honest, this slide could be two or three pages, really, to be honest. But these are folks that we just wanted to make you aware of, because it certainly takes a little village to run a small cinema. And these are just some of the people who provide us with their time and their help, without whom we would not be able to do what we do each month. So I want to recognise them and thank them very much for their volunteering. There is also a separate programming team, and these are the folks on that, led by David Lavelli, who is, where's David? At the back. All the good people are at the back, hiding at the back. Some good people at the front too. So those are the folks on the programming team, and Yeah, the addition here is Caroline coming back from maternity leave. These roles change from time to time. Some people volunteer, you know, to become part. It is a commitment. You know, there are very regular meetings, and there are tasks that these individuals have to assume each month, and it has to be done, you know, regularly in order for us to produce what we produce. But those are the programming teams. As well as all of those informal roles, we obviously have, and we couldn't operate without the volunteers that volunteer with us in addition to those roles. And we have currently around 95 volunteers who give of their time every month, day by day. So essentially, those volunteers are coordinated and organised by two folks, Harshida at the back, who's the volunteer coordinator, and Andy, who wears many hats, and one of them is the volunteer administrator. And they're the folks that ensure that those folks are up to speed, trained, and scheduled to the rota every month. And so, yeah, it's quite a task. And we must be, in Croydon, one of the biggest volunteer, well, it must be up there with one of the bigger volunteer communities, I think. Obviously, from time to time, folks stand down from volunteering, and you will probably have seen the two people during the year, Bob Sleeman and Roland Rosser, both stood down from their volunteer roles. Roland was featured in social media and in the newsletter because he was, we think, our oldest volunteer. At 93, he decided that he would hang up his David Lean t-shirt after 12 years service. And he's a very modest man, so he didn't want a fuss, but we did give him a present on behalf of all of us. And then we did use his face all over social media. So, but he did consent to that. But we are very, very proud of our volunteer community. You know, we build on it, and it is the lifeblood of the cinema. So, you know, long may that continue. So, moving on to my reflections for the year. And so, big things that have happened, and there's lots of them, so you have to bear with me here, because there are a few things I do want to highlight, and it would be rude not to. We launched a strategy last year. So we launched the 2025 to 2027 strategy earlier in the year. You will have seen it in the cinema, and it's on our website. And we did set ourselves some ambitious goals. We wanted to strengthen their programming. We wanted to broaden and diversify our audience. We want to support and value our volunteers, improve our sustainability, and ensure the long-term financial viability of the cinema. And I'll touch on some of those as I go through. But I think we've made some progress against most of those objectives, and I'll tell you where I think we've done reasonably well and where I think perhaps there's more to do. At the heart of everything that we do, though, it's all about film, right? It's all about, you know, the magic of film. And throughout the year, we've demonstrated imaginative programming, thanks to David and his team. We screened, and those of you who like numbers, 153 different films across 317 screenings. That's because some of those films we obviously play more than once. And we bring a mostly Croydon audience into the cinema. And our programme is a mixture of classics, of documentaries, of new releases, some blockbusters, some foreign language cinema, and we also host special events, trying to ensure that there's something for everybody. During those screenings, we screen films in 14 different languages, ranging from Arabic to Thai. So we're proud of the fact, I think, that we have a range of world-class films, including foreign language films, that attract sometimes big local audiences and sometimes small local audiences. But we think it's really super important that we continue to have that mix. Sometimes we will fill the cinema, you know, three, four, five times over. You'll see in our list of top 10, those are the films generally that have done well, in that we've had big audiences to the initial screenings, and then we've shown them multiple times. And that's when we obviously generate the biggest, highest grossing films. But that's just one way of looking at the programming. There's a, you know, we it's important that we show films that will attract those big audiences, but also those other important films that will attract slightly less of an audience. In terms of the things that we've done, the highlights, I think, for me, our Q&A events. Now, Joanna Scanlon, who you see featured in this slide, is obviously one, is our patron. Not obviously, she is our patron. And she is a massive supporter of the cinema, as you'll know. And she was responsible for one of the screenings, one of the Q&As that we had back in April, where we had Joanna and Neil Pearson come back to talk to us about the their work on the Bridget Jones film, All Mad About the Boy. Joanna had a tiny role in that film, and Neil had a slightly larger role. But they talked about that that film to a packed audience. Another event that we ran, that which I think a number of you here were at, was the celebration of Samuel Coleridge Taylor's 150th anniversary, which we'd held in November, where we had a couple of musicians up here playing before the documentary began. And that was a super evening and lovely, you know, a lovely community experience. In March of this year, we held a Q&A with someone called Amy Roberts, who's a costume designer, BAFTA-winning costume designer, who had done the costume design for H is for Hawk. And Amy came, and we discovered that she had previously attended Croydon College. So we, David had the idea of, well, let's obviously liaise with Croydon College and let's ask, invite them to bring some students here to meet with Amy beforehand, which they did. So six of their students came in their arts program, came to talk with Amy about her career choices, etc. And they stayed to watch the film, asked lots of intelligent questions afterwards. It was a lovely session. And Amy was so taken with them and their enthusiasm that she volunteered to provide them with ongoing advice and guidance, which was super. So we've now also got a lovely connection into Croydon College, and we really want to try and make sure that we do multiple events with them, because we've started and, you know, we haven't finished. So that was a very successful event. Other things, just to touch on, National Theatre Live, we introduced last year. That's continued again. Lots of big audiences for National Theatre Live at a price point that is at probably the cheapest in London, actually, for National Theatre Live. Still expensive, but cheapest in London. And that's generally big audiences every time we screen. But as well as those things, we still are true to our commitment to accessibility and inclusion. And we do dementia-friendly every month, relaxed screenings, sometimes in collaboration with Club Soda, and Babes in Arms screenings. And in addition, we provide subtitling for films regularly for those with hearing, well, with or without hearing loss. I know whenever I bring my kids to a screening, they want the subtitles, because that's how they watch things at home. But these types of programmes are an important expression of our belief that our cinema needs to be welcoming and accessible to everybody. Other highlights. Adrian, obviously we couldn't do an AGM without talking about Adrian. So Adrian's post-film discussions held in conjunction with the U3A, again, some of our biggest selling, biggest sellout screenings, very popular, attracting a strong audience every time, and they stay afterwards to talk about the film. Similarly, our connections with the Cinema Museum, where we show 35, and again, we're one of very few cinemas who are still showing 35mm films, not necessarily every month, but you know, we're doing it every other month, I think, David, is that right? Yeah. And again, they get a big audience, sometimes from 35mm enthusiasts and sometimes not, you know, so there's a nice mixture generally at those screenings. One of the encouraging developments during the year this year was our success in trying to reach out to new audiences. You'll remember that one of our objectives, strategic objectives, is to try and diversify the audience and make it more representative of the community in which we sit, Croydon. And we've strengthened some of the partnerships that we had in the past and created some new ones. So a couple of that stand out. Croydon Carers, we are doing regular events with them. Again, that means our cinema is full of carers who just have a day off caring and come here. We've also developed a new partnership with Croydon Young Carers. So these are children anything from the age of, I'm not quite sure what the youngest age is, something like 8 to 18, who come in as young carers, and they come in and similarly watch a film and have some respite. And we're doing more with the Croydon Family Hub. You'll see there's a number of family films coming up, but we started that last year, and we're very, very keen to get families into the cinema during the summer. You'll also possibly have seen that we're doing something at the Wimbledon screen at the back of East Croydon Station with Croydon Bid. They asked us if we wanted to use the screen when the tennis wasn't on for two screenings, one in Saturday morning coming and the next again Saturday. And essentially, you know, we just have provided the film, but they are, you know, it's deck chairs and bean bags if you're interested. But the idea is that we've got an opportunity there to appeal to a family audience who are moving through and might want to sit in the deck chairs. Hopefully the weather will be good. And also we want to tell them about the cinema because that's a moving, passing trade through East Croydon. So we're hoping that we're going to encourage a number of people to come who maybe haven't heard of us because we know that's still an issue. And then one other thing we launched last year was called Real Talk, which is a film club, which we've developed in partnership with, a bit like the U3A film club that Adrian's involved in with East Croydon Cool, and a company that's just across the road here called Disauthority, who are a post-production company, and they have sponsored Real Talk with us. And the idea with that is that we're trying to encourage young professionals, of whom there are significant numbers in Croydon, to come into the cinema such that we can broaden our audience. And those have been successful. We've had two so far. We've got one in September. And again, it's a young, younger audience, more diverse, and they want to stay to talk about the film and then mingle afterwards, which is lovely to see. And then we've done something with Croydonites. You'll see Croydonites are doing a one-week festival in the beginning of July. Well, they're bigger festivals in November, and we've done something. I know some of you in the audience, I'm looking over there, I know some of you in the audience are fans of Croydonite and come along to their things as well. But we were pleased last year that we worked with them for the very first time. And again, we got a different audience into the cinema who prefer perhaps or who favour live theatre over cinema. And again, in the hope that those individuals would come back. We're planning on doing something again with them in November. Watch this space because they're looking for... Well, I'll tell you more later. So in terms of audience, the audience size for the calendar year 2025, if you were to look at how many people actually came into the cinema, actually, you know, and this is in summer and in winter, right? So 10,000 people came into the cinema during that calendar year, which I think is that's a huge amount of people coming into the centre of Croydon, you know, in all weathers. On public transport mostly, you know, and there's not a huge amount sometimes to attract people into this particular part of Croydon. And so I think that's a fairly sizable achievement for a volunteer-led cinema, especially when cinemas are struggling and we've seen that, you know, the one across the road, of course, has now closed its doors. It's a tricky time, I think, for cinemas, and I think we've done well. However, we're not going to rest on our laurels, of course, because we do, and we are serious about attracting a more diverse audience, younger audience, people from communities who are currently unrepresented in our patron base. And we've taken important steps, I think, towards establishing a stronger position for the future. Overall, our marketing and outreach activity has shifted. So social media engagement has increased significantly. We've got a particularly strong growth on Instagram, and we've introduced some new initiatives like favourites, you know, where people record their three favourite films and talk about the film that they want to come to see next at the David Lane Cinema. We've done that with a number of folks. If anybody's in the audience who wants to do one of those favourites, talk to us afterwards, because we know we're always keen to show local people talking about their favourite films. We're obviously trying new things, like partnering with local influencers in the town. We commissioned some drone footage to help people find the cinema a little bit more effectively. I was quite surprised, though. You can just fly a drone wherever you fancy, you know what I mean? I mean, if you wanted to fly a drone over Central Croydon, it isn't a problem. Anyway, but we are working and continuing to work on refreshing our visual identity and improving our communications, and that includes our website. So we're at the exciting stage of that process now, where we're just about to start the work on the website development with the new designs. And that will launch at the beginning of September. With a following wind, it certainly will. Other things that happened during the year, I think, you know, we got a lot of good publicity, a lot of it thanks to Joanna. Joanna, whenever she gets interviewed for anything, so she was being interviewed, I think, originally for Riot Women, which she was starring in, one of the women in that. And of course, whenever she's not very keen on doing the publicity after a film. I don't think she likes it very much. But whenever she does do it, she always manages to get the conversation turning around to independent cinema. And so we got good name checks on this morning, ITV News, and the ITV News team came in to the cinema where you guys are sitting at the front row here and did an interview with her, which got on the 10 o'clock news. So, and that's largely because Joanna just talks about us all the time, so which we are very, very happy with. I've talked about volunteers, but it really is important. The dedication of the volunteers isn't particularly important for us. And I think one of the things that we've seen through the stewardship of Harshida and Andy is that the diversity of our volunteer community has changed in terms of age profile, ethnicity, and I think it is now beginning to represent, you know, the community better. Still work to do, I think, but you know, I think that's a shift, I think. Financially, the cinema remains in a good position, and I'll say that with a slight caveat in a minute, but increased ticket sales, careful financial management has enabled us to invest in improvements to the cinema, and Andy will talk about some of those, whilst maintaining sort of healthy reserves, and you'll see what those in a second when Andy talks through that. That those reserves are really important, because you cannot know when that thing's going to blow up in the projection room, or the server's going to need replaced. These are huge bits of kit that cost a lot of money, and so we need to make sure that we have enough in reserve for those eventualities and others. The ticketing system has helped us to get better quality. We introduced a new one last year. It helps us get better quality management information, so we know who's new to the cinema, we know who to target for marketing, which we're trying to do more of. But the one little cloud on the horizon that I need to be clear with you about is that the conversations with the council started in March of this year when they asked us for rent, significant rent. And so we've been in early discussions with those. We've had two meetings with the council, and the rent demands are ongoing. And that does obviously raise some doubts about financial stability. However, we are committed to working with the council in a collaborative way. They seem to be listening. I think we can be, yeah. The three of us had a meeting with them last week. And we are, you know, we are obviously going to stress with the council that, you know, we need to do something which gives everybody security, recognising that we maintain the cinema, and we contribute a lot to the richness of Croydon's cultural life. And so, you know, it's not just about, you know, a spreadsheet. It's about some of that being taken into consideration. And to be fair, you know, they are listening. So hopefully things will become clearer as we go. Right. I'm going to... I've touched on some of these things as I've gone. Top 10 screenings. So Alan Alan mentioned that that we would do this. Can you see the one on the left-hand side? Or is it a little bit faint? Dawn of Impressionism is the Nouvelle Vague. Mr. Burton, which Alan mentioned. Downton Abbey, of course. Did anybody see the one on the right-hand side? It was just an accident. Yes. So was that Iranian French? Yeah. Yeah. So that was number six. And then here are the top five films. So Nuremberg. Now, Soul Path is obviously not without its controversy. however, that didn't seem to impact sales because it was all of that hoo-ha hit at the time we were screening. So it actually meant that more people came to see it, to be honest. Because I thought that people might say, oh, I want a refund. But, you know, the reality is it is a movie based on, you know, a book that was sort of not what it was supposed to be. And then I Swear is obviously the Scottish one. Coral and Hamlet was our biggest grossing film in the fiscal year. That's because we showed it again, the whole idea, you know, showed it multiple times, and lots of people came to see it. And my top films of 25-26, well, I was a massive, I didn't come to see it multiple times, mind, but I was a massive Hamlet fan, and I thought she very much deserved that Oscar. Thank you very much. I think The Ballad of Wallace Island, anybody seen that? No. Beautiful. That was a film that originally was a short film that was made by folks, I think, wasn't it? And then many years later, it was picked up and they made it into a full feature. And it is a really beautiful little film. I really love it. And then One of Them Days is a film that I came to with my older daughters. And I, you know, she's shaking her head at the back there because she didn't like it at all. But I loved it. It's a feel good, funny, made me laugh at least five times. And it's a female buddy movie and it's a comedy caper basically. But it's good. I liked it. And again, that's another example of a film that didn't get a big audience, and it should have had a big audience. It was a decent film, and it didn't, though. And again, that's the sort of thing that we need to work on. Right, so those are my top films for 2025. But again, I'd like to just finish by thanking everybody. You know, the volunteers, Joanna, our partners in Croydon Council, and our supporters, and obviously you guys, our audience, because your commitment and enthusiasm, without that, you know, we wouldn't, nothing would be possible. So thank you very much. Thank you. Andy, over to you.
Hi, guys. I'll move out because I feel a bit squished.
Sorry.
Hi. So the exciting bit of the evening, I'm sure this is what you've come for, the finance report. Yes. So this is my third AGM, I think. So I think I know most people here. If you don't know me, I'm Andy. I'm the treasurer for your cinema. And I'm pleased to say this year's been successful again. I just put that into context in terms of what success means for the cinema. So in terms of, we are a CIC, so Community Interest Company. So we're not profit making. We're here to serve Croydon. That's our role. However, as Sam said, we do need to cover our expenses. On top of that, things break and we need to have the money to fix them. And we've had quite a lot of things break lately. And we need to have money to invest in our strategic direction, which at the moment, again, as Sam said, is about expanding our audience and reaching into areas of the community that we don't currently reach. So let's move on to the first slide, Alan. Can't really read that. Anyway, off the top of my head. I think the message from this slide is we're stable, we're viable, our income has increased and our expenses have increased by the same amount. So you'll see our profit before tax this year is about the same as our profit before tax last year. Because of the complexities, I don't fully understand, of the corporation tax calculation, but luckily our accountants do. We owe more corporation tax this year, so our profits after tax are a little bit less, sadly. Cash in the bank's a bit more, so good. Our creditors are a bit more, so not so good. That 19,000 is made up of 13,000 distributor costs. So this is where we've submitted box office returns and we haven't had invoices in yet. 2,000 of which go back to 2023 and before. So I guess we'll never have to pay those, but I'm told I can't write them off till 7 years. So we keep them on the books and we'll keep the money ready to pay them. 3,000 of which is corporation tax, which we'll pay when it's due, and 3,000 of which was VAT owing at the time we did the accounts, which has been paid. So that's where we are. So good shape, same as last year. If you move on to the next slide, I'll give you a bit more on the accounts. So you can see Holly's done me some lovely slides. I gave her some very boring numbers. But the income, you can see, is nearly all ticket sales. So all the blue is ticket sales. Our ticket sales numbers have gone up 20,000 this year. 12,000 of that was because we increased the number of screenings. So on average, we've averaged 28 screenings a month this year as opposed to 24 the previous year. And if you can see, you know, the amount of profit we make, that £12,000 is a lot of money. 8,000 of which I'll talk about a bit later, but as audience members, you'll know we increased the ticket prices a little bit this year to cover our VAT liability. So 8,000 of that was that. Expenses, biggest expense is distributors, as you'd expect, and that's kind of gone up with inflation. The next biggest expense, again, as Sam's pointed out, is salaries, and we have 5 salaried individuals. We try and pay them as fairly as we can, so it's London minimum wage or above. We can't possibly reimburse them for the amount of hours they do. They all put in a lot more hours than we pay them for, so thank you very much for that. And then there's various other contributions to our expenses, but that's what we're made up of. If you move on to the next page, I'll go through the financial highlights. The obviously the big Christmas quiz, again, superb, made us 2,700. And again, you can see the size of our profit compared to that. That's an amazing contribution for us. The next two are interesting. So we're a cinema, so sound and pictures are our biggest asset, I think. And you'll see Roger has put in a new Dolby processor, a new sound mixer, and some new sound equipment, which we're benefiting from here. I've had no feedback today, which is great. And also, I'm really pleased to see we've finally got a new screen. So where we had that horrible black splodge there, that's now gone. So I hope everyone appreciates that. It's been annoying me for years. I think I said we increased our monthly screenings from 24 a month to 28 a month. And that's increased ticket income, 12,000. We've had a huge amount of donations this year, so thank you to everyone who's donated. I'll cover that off in a little bit more detail in a minute. And there was a massive donation from Disauthority, so thank you to them. Other things we've done, we put a new ticketing system in, TicketSolve. That's been really good. It helps us with the ticketing journey. I hope it helps you guys as customers with the ticketing journey. It's really helped with the donations because we've been able to put a little bit of friction in the ticketing journey to ask for the donation, and that has pretty much doubled our donations. So that's been amazing and has paid for the new ticketing system in itself. On top of that, it gives us a lot better management information that we can mine and helping with our diversity objective. It also allows us to automate a number of things where people did manually before, which is great. And there's a lot more things we can do with TicketSolve that we just haven't had time to look at. But I think with Louise at the back, we're going to start looking at campaigns and things soon. The other important thing for me, so we've increased the number of people in the finance team by 50%. So before it was me and a lady called Kath, who does the BORs and then the box office returns and then deals with the invoices when they come back. And it was all getting a bit too much for me. So we've got a new finance manager role, and I saw him behind the bar, but I can't see him now. But anyway, David Hainsworth. So thank you for David. He has taken on all the daily accounting issues. So he handles all our payments, and he handles all the issuing of invoices. And really important, he's taken my rickety spreadsheets and he's put them all onto QuickBooks, so which has helped with the VAT issue this year. So, and that's the last thing I was going to mention. So VAT, in November, we became liable for VAT. We hit the 90,000 income threshold. We had David, so he put everything on QuickBooks. We did a little calculation on ticket prices. So I think if you know with VAT, so now 20% of our ticket income is not ours. It belongs to Her Majesty's Revenue. However, we can claim back VAT on things we spend money on. So mostly invoices from distributors. Obviously, we can't claim back on salaries. So thinking about ticket prices and trying to keep them to a minimum, the increase, we came up with a little calculation and put the ticket prices up about 10% to cover the 20% VAT. And so far, so good. It's worked out. So it's kind of net cost neutral for us, which is what we were trying to do. And we had our first VAT return in March, and that's gone through very smoothly. And obviously, our next one's due in a couple of days. So that's gone remarkably well. So those are the highlights for this year. Next year, this year coming up, which we've started on, Sam mentioned we're working through, we've got a new brand, and we're working with a lady called Julia Williams on the brand at the moment. Looks great. And hopefully you'll all see it soon. As soon as we've got the brand nailed down, we'll move on to a new website. And again, I won't tell you any more about that. You can wait and be excited when it comes out. We have made use of TicketSolve to add Apple Pay now to our means of payment. So not only can you pay with various forms of credit card, we've now added Apple Pay to that. And that started this morning. So if anyone wants to buy a ticket now, you can pay with Apple Pay. I was hoping Google Pay would be in there, but it's not quite ready yet. But Google Pay is coming for those of you who don't use Apple. Sam talked about the rent, so we're working with the council to come up with a nominal rent, I think was their words. I think that will be beneficial to us, because we will have a formal license to operate with the council, which will allow us to apply for some funding via grants. It's obviously easier if you've got license to operate. Will give us a closer working relationship with the council as well, which I think will help for things like when we want to renovate this space, if we want to renovate the bar space, etc. So I think that's going to be a useful thing. And as long as their definition of a nominal is the same as my definition of a nominal, we'll be fine. Combining entities. So pre-VAT, we had the Arts Bar as a separate organisation to the cinema. Now we are VAT liable. We'll merge the two organisations back together again, which means we'll have to pay VAT on the bar. But on the plus side, we won't have to pay for additional accountants. We won't have to have two sets of AGMs. We won't have to have two sets of insurance. So on balance, I think it'll be good. And I think David and Stephen will give out a large sigh of relief, I think. What else I've got on my list? Oh, and the last one on there. So as I said, we're always fixing things. We've always got plans in terms of renovation, things we'd like to spend money on to improve the cinema, to meet our strategic goals. And we kind of muddle through. So what I'm going to be working on with everyone this year is, well, let's have a prioritised list of things that we need to do. Let's work out when we're going to spend that money. Are we going to spend it in this financial year? Are we going to spend it in the next financial year, et cetera, et cetera? So that we've got some management. Now, we have to recognise with that not everything goes to plan, but let's have a plan, and then we know when we move away from it. So I think those are the key things for me in this next year. I think that's it. Move to the next slide, Alan. My three favourite films. Samuel Coleridge Taylor. I thought that was a fantastic event and really informative for me because I didn't know much about him. I didn't realise what fantastic music he'd made. And really, it was fantastic to have the two people from the Chinaki Orchestra playing in the cinema. They were amazing. It was a real privilege to see them, so I loved it. Summer of Soul, I've seen Summer of Soul a number of times, but again, it was great to have it on the big screen. Great to have Roger's sound. I don't know where Roger is, but his sound is brilliant. And it was brilliant to see, well, it's a great story. And on top of that, it's great to see people like Stevie Wonder when he was little Stevie Wonder. Great to see, I'd forgotten about the Fifth Dimension and Sly and Family Stone. So many, Nina Simone, etc. It was a great film. And lastly, Lollipop. So Lollipop reminded me of a Ken Loach film. But yeah, great story, great acting, and a happy ending. So what's not to like? Those are my three favourites. And lastly, I'll finish by saying thank you to everyone. Thank you. So it's been a good year. So thank you to everyone who's bought a ticket. You can see that helps. Thank you to everyone who's made a donation. And thank you to all our volunteers for all the hard work they put in all year. So thank you very much, everyone. Accountants. Okay. So we'd like to reappoint our accountants, who are Acco Tax, this year. We've got a new lead. Kalpesh has moved on. We've now got a guy called Usama, who's very good. So we'd like to reappoint them.
Okay, thank you everyone. Back to me, I'm afraid. And my solemn duty now is to set before you the section of proceedings which is to be candid, a bit dull, but nonetheless is an important and necessary to the continued smooth running of the cinema. Those of you who have been regular attenders at our AGMs over the years will know that under the cinema's constitution, the officers, the three of us, are appointed at the AGM for periods of 2 years at a time. This year, all the current officer roles, so chair, treasurer, and secretary, are due to be renewed. Sam will complete her first two-year term as chair in December, as will I as secretary, and Andy, being something of a masochist, will be completing his second two-year term in the treasurer role. Seems like no time at all, Andy. So this AGM needs to appoint a chair, a secretary, and a treasurer for the next 2 year period beginning January 2027. Sam, Andy, and I are all willing to carry on in our existing roles for another 2 years. Whether the rest of you in the room regard this as good news or not is a question we are about to answer. The AGM has to agree to each of us being reappointed, and it's open to anyone else here this evening to stand as chair, as treasurer, or as secretary to replace the current incumbent. Constitutionally, each candidate for an officer role must be backed by a proposer and a seconder. So we're now going to formally go through each of the officer roles in turn and either confirm reappointment or appoint someone new. So first, the role of chair. Can I ask if anyone is willing to propose Sam's reappointment as chair, please? That's a lot of people. Heather, okay, thank you. Let me make a note of it. And can I have a seconder, please? Kathy, thank you. So can I now ask if anyone else wishes to stand for the role of chair? It's okay, I'm not there. Okay, well, I think that's probably a no then in that case. So in that case, Sam is appointed to a further 2 years as chair from January 2027 until December 2028. Congratulations, Sam.
Thank you.
So next we turn, so Downing Street may be getting the King of the North, but the Croydon Clock Tower still has the Queen of Scotland. So next we turn to the role of Treasurer. Can I, again, so same process, can I ask if anyone is willing to propose Andy's reappointment as Treasurer, please? Thank you. David's hand shot up first. Thank you. And seconder, Arshida, thank you. I understand that someone called, what's the name again? Oh yeah, Rachel Reeves apparently has expressed an interest in the role. Apparently she has some financial experience and is expecting to give up her current role fairly soon, but unfortunately, however, Rachel has been unable to find anyone willing to act as either proposer or seconder. So in those circumstances, does anyone else want to put themselves forward for treasurer, please? Another resounding silence. So in that case, I can confirm, Andy, congratulations, you have been reappointed for another 2 years. Well, it's all going smoothly so far, but now we come to the secretary. Now, protocol prevents me from overseeing my own reappointment, so I'm going to hand over to Sam at this stage to take us through the process.
Okay, so I'd forgotten I was doing this, actually, to be honest. So Alan obviously has kindly agreed to continue on, and we need someone to propose Alan again in his second stint. Is there anybody who is interested in proposing Alan? Oh, Stephen Batchelor's hand is raised. Could you take a minute of that, Secretary? And anybody willing to second Alan's continued appointment? Very good. I've had a mental blank. Sorry.
Leslie.
How could I? How could I forget? Leslie Batchelor. Okay. And is there anybody who wants to also be considered for the secretary role on the David Lane committee? Again, I think we take resounding silence as you being endorsed. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm of course humbled by the trust in which you placed me, et cetera, et cetera. So now to anyone who's still awake, thank you for your patience as we worked through that rather tedious but necessary and important formality. We, having dealt with the appointment of officers, I can now sense the collective pulse of the room beginning to quicken as we move to discuss a change to the cinema's constitution. I've referred to the constitution a couple of times already. For context, it was drafted in 2014, and unsurprisingly, some 12 years later, it could do with a bit of an update. Any update to the Constitution requires the agreement of a general meeting, which means this general meeting. Our aim is to undertake a comprehensive review of the Constitution in time for next year's AGM, so get excited even now. But at this stage, we just want to make one small change, which we'd like to make immediately. So paragraph 10 of the Constitution says, in relation to meetings of the committee, that, and I quote, six committee members shall form a quorum. So in other words, we need at least six members present at every committee meeting to be able to conduct our business. The quorum size of six is based on having a full committee of 12 members. However, as you saw from the earlier slides, we now have a full committee of nine, with several other folk attending meetings only as and when needed. And as Sam has explained, being a committee member and attending regular meetings takes up a lot of volunteers' time. So rather than requiring everyone to attend every meeting, we want to keep the committee as streamlined as possible, consistent with the need to have the right people together to make the right decisions. So with a committee of nine, six is a high number to get to in order to achieve a quorum, and we've struggled a little bit at a couple of recent meetings. So our proposal is to change the wording of paragraph 10 of the Constitution so that it reads as follows: at least half the full committee members shall be present to form a quorum. So the effect of that change would be to reduce the quorum needed at present from six to five, and it would also provide flexibility if the committee should reduce further at any point. Sorry, I've got to read this stuff out, otherwise I'm going to miss half of it. So to agree a change to the Constitution, I haven't heard any snoring yet, but I can see a few people looking a bit glazed. To agree a change to the Constitution itself requires at least 60% of those present to vote in favour of the change. That's in paragraph 33 of the Constitution, if anyone's remotely interested. Before we vote on the proposed change, does anyone have any comments or questions about it, please? If we reduce the size of the committee? And I think it's fair to say we're not intending to reduce the size of the committee any further. I think that's right, isn't it,
yeah,
Sam?
Yeah.
I mean, the change to the quorum is really just to give us that flexibility. So if we were to lose one or two committee members temporarily, then instead of still requiring a six to get to a quorum, if we only had seven or eight members, which is obviously a bit of a struggle, we would just go down to it would mean half of whatever the number of members we had.
You have nine.
We have nine at the moment, yeah, but there's always the possibility of losing one or two, and if the quorum is stuck at six, as it is at the moment, that can make it difficult. Leslie, sorry. That's 60% to vote. That's 60% of the people in the room at the moment.
Yes.
And as I spent some of Sam's presentation counting you, I can tell you that there are 44 of you out there. And so 27 of you, if my maths are right, I looked to the treasurer to confirm this. Yes, thank you, Heather. That's obviously very true. So for the change to the Constitution to be made, 60% of you here this evening need to vote in favour. I'm hoping that the numbers will be such that I don't have to do a physical count, but we'll see. I mean, does anyone have any other questions or concerns about it before we move to a vote? Okay, so in that case, shall I read the change again? So what we're going to do is move from the current paragraph 10, which reads, six committee members shall form a quorum. So irrespective of the size of the committee, six members have to be present in order for a meeting to be quorate. We want to change that to at least half the full committee members shall be present to form a quorum. So whatever the number of the committee, obviously it's nine at the moment, so we need five. If it reduces to eight, we'd only need four. But as I say, there is no intention to reduce it further. It's just that, you know, Sometimes it's unavoidable. People have to step down for whatever reason, temporarily, and it may take us a while to fill a role. So on that basis, then, could I ask those of you in favour of the change to raise your hands, please? This is looking encouraging. Anyone against the change? Carried unanimously. Thank you very much. So thank you for your patience. That is that. And I think we now move to an opportunity for you to ask any questions you may have. Over to you.
There is a lady at the back there. I don't know how we're going to get... Have you got a roving mic? Yes, excellent.
Thank you. Oh, is that on?
Yes.
Yeah. My name's Jane. I have a comment about the current website, a moan, really. The What's On page has a presentation of the films in little rectangles on a pale lavender background, and the type underneath telling you about the time of date of the film is in very tiny typeface in white, and the contrast is very poor, and I really struggle to see it. So I hope on the new website that'll be taken into consideration.
That is one of the things that we're going to fix, yeah, because one of the bits of feedback we've had from the website designer is that that's exactly the wrong two shades of colour to be readable, and particularly with anybody with a reading impairment, it's the wrong combination. So yeah, we are definitely going to fix that. I don't think we need to see any more.
Can I just add, Sam? I'm Roger at the back here. I actually put that website together in 2 weeks over Christmas as an emergency situation because the previous website suffered some database corruption. So it was necessary that we did something. But one of the problems that you mentioned about the small text can be fixed on your own machine, because you can alter your browser to display text in a larger format. That may make it easier for you to read. Can't do much about the colours, but as you've heard, we are working on that to be changed over the next few weeks.
I only found out I could do that about 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Right, okay.
I don't need the mic, I've got a very loud voice, so I assume everybody can hear me anyway, yeah?
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm Nikki, I'm a relative newbie. I just wondered, picking up on the comment there about the contrast, I'm just wondering, it may not be feasible because of who the website designer is, or costs, or whatever, but I'm just wondering about accessibility, particularly given that we're talking about, you know, making it as accessible to as possible. Would it be feasible for the website designer to touch base with people like Club Soda for learning disability, like Croydon Vision for people with visual impairment, like Alzheimer's? I don't know if there must be a local Croydon.
Or an IB.
Yeah, well, there's Croydon Vision, which is specifically Croydon. So I think it would be really helpful if that was feasible. I mean,
The website designer is a professional that's engaged specifically to do what we've asked him to do, and there is specific guidance for accessibility, which I assume he will follow.
Yeah, that's right. We've talked about DDA changes we can make to the website, and where we can, we will. Obviously, some are more expensive than others, but yeah, we're aware of what can be done and what can't be done. Probably the other thing to say is when we develop the new website, we're going to develop it with a mobile-first view as opposed to a desktop view first, because certainly my view, and I think everyone else's view, is people will buy tickets on phones more going forward.
So I imagine the website designer is already on it, but in case this is at all useful, there's a tool called Wave that I use in the course of my everyday work, working on web applications, that assesses and highlights any accessibility problems. Yeah. And it's a free tool that then, as a developer, you can sort of address. Just throwing that out there.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. I'll mention it. Yeah, I've not heard of Wave. I've heard of others, but yeah, we'll have a look at that. That's brilliant. No, I think there's textual descriptions. There's, I think for each film there's a textual description, a video and a picture. Is that right, Roger? You maybe have to click to drop that, to get the text to drop down. But I think it's there at the moment, and when you click through to buy the tickets, it's the same.
But I guess the way it illustrates is it's hard to navigate some aspects of it, and I think what we're trying to improve with the new website.
Yeah. At the moment, on the current temporary website, there is text help on each image, which for anybody with visual impairments, it does describe what the image represents, certainly film-wise. Obviously, in 2 weeks I can only do so much, but we'll see what we can do with the new design.
Well, yeah, if you've still got a problem, Bernard, let me know, I'll show you. Yeah.
So, hi. So I'm Ricardo. I come here relatively often, I think. Sometimes I usually come with my dad, but it's my first time at the AGM. And I also work down at Croydon College, so I was very pleased to hear about some of the recent collaborations that have been happening. And I guess just the main question is about how to maintain that going forward, because working at the college, I know that our curriculum team manager for the creative arts is actually leaving next week, and there's a lot of churn in that department. So I want to make sure that there is a kind of consistent link, and also just some questions and thoughts about what that might look like in the future in terms of keeping the college involved with the good work that we're doing here.
Thank you. It's a good point you raise, actually, because one of the challenges is if you have a particular relationship with an academic and that academic moves on, then that's difficult. But he did get in touch with us last week and said he was moving on, and he's given us 5 or 6 other names of colleagues. So what we plan to do, what I thought we could do, is just have a breakfast or some meeting or something and get them all in, or try and do something that's convenient for them, because these are busy, busy people. We do recognise, you know, it's hard to fit it in an academic, you know, when you're working and teaching and marking and doing exams and stuff. So, but we do that's one of the biggest challenges that we have with any of the local connections, be it the Brit School or Croydon College or whatever. You do need to have an identified contact or contacts that you manage the relationship with, and you know, and and develop the relationship further. And because we had that really positive experience with Croydon College, we don't really want that to be a one and done. You know, half of the battle is trying to make sure that you continue it, but then you recognise that there might be a change of personnel. So, and we find one of the things that's hardest sometimes is schools. Because we've tried, you know, to target some schools in Croydon, the Brit School and others, and colleges. It does take quite a lot of effort, focused effort, to try and maintain the relationship. And it's hard work, you know. Sometimes it's fruitful and worth it, but it needs focused attention. So David's got his hand up at the back there, so you might want to add something to that one.
Yes, I'd just like to say that, interestingly, one of the students actually approached us. He'd heard from one of the tutors that there was a chance that he could get his film shown here. Yes, we're in conversation with him at the moment. It may not be the film that he showed us. It might be another film that he's working on. But, we certainly hope to be showing his film sometime at the cinema. And we had a very good relationship with the Brit School, which unfortunately fell away after COVID. So I'd like to think that we could carry on the same kind of thing. Obviously, if the Brit School coming back to us, that's great. But if we can carry on that kind of thing with Croydon College and the students there, that would be great. Yeah.
One that would be great, Sharon, thank you. One of the things that also is worth mentioning that David touched on there is that we do occasionally, from time to time, have short films that we play before the main feature, you know, like we used to do back in the day. I used to always get a short film. And they're often from local people who have approached us and said, listen, I've made this short film, and we watch it, obviously, and the programming team then assess the quality and decide if they're going to show it at the cinema. And we've done that a number of times during the year that we've just been discussing, actually. And it is one of the things that we're happy to do and probably want to do more of, actually, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah, there's a sort of mutual exchange of leaflets with Fairfield Halls. I mean, Box Park, no, we haven't actually reached out to them, I don't think, as part of the outreach work. It is one of the conversations. Obviously, they're a commercial enterprise too, and they have events, but that isn't to say that they wouldn't be happy to collaborate with us in some way. I mean, it's worth exploring, I think, further, and it's on Louise's list. And I think when we're doing these Croydon bid, you know, Wimbledon screenings where we're showing the animated films, there's an opportunity, I think, maybe there to try and make connections with some of the people that we're there with. So, you know, not yet, but maybe, yeah.
Hi, Matthew, Box Office and Bar. I'm really impressed at the amount of outreach work you're doing. But I was just wondering, in terms of the plans going forward, what are you kind of looking at in terms of diversity from a racial and ethnic point of view? Have you made outreaches to particular groups? The other thing is a side question. I was just thinking, have you noticed any differences in terms of programming or any programming ideas going forward, now that we've lost the other big cinema, the other cinema that we had in Croydon, whether that's affected at all. But certainly the main question really is about what you're going to do about, if anything, about diversity in terms of from a racial and ethnic point of view.
I think that's a really good question. And I think it is one of the things that, you know, we are giving more thought. And you've seen through some of the things that I mentioned in my report, there are screenings that we're doing that are bringing in a much more diverse audience. I'll probably think of, you know, the East Croydon Kew Aldis Authority screenings are regularly bringing in a much more ethnically diverse audience. I mean, we also collaborate and have done for some time with the BME, the Croydon BME Forum, where some of the films that Andy mentioned and I mentioned were in, were partnerships with that forum. We had one earlier. We had a collaboration last week with Andrew Brown and his team to celebrate Windrush film, which was about the Barrel, called The Barrel Children, and it was the director of that film who came in as one of the panel with others. And again, that was a very much more, we had two screenings, and that was a very different audience, and an audience that some of whom had come to the cinema before, but many of whom had not. And actually, that was a super example of a collaboration that brings in an audience that you don't always see. And our challenge is to make sure that some of those people come back. And that's about effective programming, effective marketing to actually, you know, because some of the ticketing things that you can do now is to target the customers who've come to those types of screenings and say, you came to this, you might enjoy this, this, and this, you know? And, you know, that, for any marketeers in the room, is basic stuff. But actually, for us, we haven't done that before. You know, we haven't been able to do it because our ticketing system didn't allow us to. And I think now there is that possibility. Similarly, we do something with the BFI called escape screenings once a month. And those escape screenings are free for people who typically, the BFI target people who typically never come to cinema. And they're very good at the marketing, so they target people locally. They do it at cinemas up and down the country, but they target people locally who are in the, you know, who are younger and much more representative of the borough. And they come in big numbers to the cinema for those escape screenings. Now, okay, they're free. But they come, they watch the films, and it's full crowds. And I think one of the things that we want to try and make sure is after the, you're allowed to do it three times, and then you can't do any more free, you don't get any more freebies after that. And what we want to do is make sure that those guys come back into the cinema afterwards by targeting them after they've done the last freebie to say, come back, you know, it's cheap for, you know, under 25s, and we'd love to see you and look at these are the films that we think you might like. I think, so those are the sorts of things. And obviously we are willing and interested to talk to folks who approach us who are interested in doing new things. You know, sometimes we approach them, but occasionally we get folks approaching us to say, listen, we're interested in doing something, you know, and we will try and work with folks to try and collaborate on new partnerships. So I think we're open to new things, and we've done some interesting new things in the last 12 months, and we hope to do more, I think is the gist of it.
Could you not hear? Right, start again. Right. Having been out of combat for some months, I've missed up the discussions about rebranding. Now, there's a lot of people here who have been part of the furniture for a long time, and just wonder what the brainwork was to actually rebrand a machine that ain't broke.
You would get a variety of views on that from people within this room and people that we've already consulted with. I think the short answer is that there's a subcommittee of people. I mean, a show of hands. And who's on the subcommittee looking at the visual identity? Myself, Andy, Adrian, Hershida. Have I missed anybody?
Lauren.
And Lauren, yeah. We did do, which you may have missed, Stephen, we did do a bit of consultation through a questionnaire that we sent out to people asking what you like, what you don't like, what would you not like to lose, what would you love to lose, and you know, and people came back in fairly sizable numbers, both volunteers, patrons, community organisations, because we reached out to lots of people, and we got a lot of interesting feedback on what people liked. I mean, the clear message was, you know, don't lose the legacy, don't lose what's good about the cinema in terms of, you know, the being proud of David Lean, and if anything, give that a bit more, you know, spotlight, but do it in a way that's visually appealing to a broader community and is consistently and attractively done across all of the things that we produce, not just one place. Because one of the things that we've done, obviously, as we've gone through this exercise, is to see how many places do we keep the where does the logo appear in how many different places and in what types of different formats. And, of course, what we discovered as part of that is that, you know, as a variety, well, number one, people were confused about what the logo was. That came out loud and clear. And number two, when we did look at the, you know, when we looked at all of the places that our marketing exists, it was inconsistently applied across a number of different things that we produce in the social media area, in brochures and posters, etc. And that's not a criticism of anybody who's doing any of that work. It's just an observation that we're a bunch of volunteers, and you know, naturally over time, you know, there's no necessarily as much consistency with the logo as it evolves in different areas, as you would imagine a big organisation would have. But we are a small organisation with a very strong heritage, and I hope, although you can't please all of the people all of the time, I hope that you'll like what has been agreed by this lovely little team of people who've been acting as a subcommittee and working with an external designer. You will be the first to see it. We're not going to launch it externally before you guys, the volunteer community and the newsletter folks, see it before it gets launched officially. But yeah, I like to see, you know, no one likes change particularly, but I hope you will enjoy, and you will like what we've come up with. And you'll be seeing it soon.
Lagging behind a little bit, it's me again. You just said something about the ticketing being presented in a new form with something over the top of a laptop, and Bernard commented on it. What can you explain what that actually means, please? Repeat, someone like me.
I think I said, we're doing two things with the website. So at the moment, I don't know if it's clear, but when you buy a ticket, you're dropped into another system called TicketSolve. TicketSolve is what we purchased, and we're stuck with that. We like it, but we can't really change that. However, what we want to do is to wrap our own personal website around that in a very simple way that makes it a lot more visually striking and a lot more simple to navigate, and will address some of the issues that have been raised by Nikki and Reem, etc., around DDA. And I guess the other thing from my perspective, and I think if you look at it, the website does not display particularly well on a mobile phone, which we've done some investigation, and it's around about 50% of people buy tickets on mobile phone. So we'd like it to look better on a mobile phone, as well as continuing to look good on a desktop. That's the plan. The other thing we want to do with it is make it a lot simpler for us as a community to maintain, because we're not website developers. So what we're going to go with is a very static system that's got the key pages on, and our volunteers, like myself, like Sam, like Michael, who runs the box office, will drop the pictures into it. So they'll drop pictures and words and images onto static pages, so it becomes a lot easier for us to maintain. So the idea is a simpler but more visually attractive website that reflects our image.
I like the word simpler. So if I buy mine on my laptop, and that's still going to be straightforward.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully it will be even easier and the colour contrasts will be better. I hope. But please feedback if they're not, yeah? Yeah.
In terms of being a Luddite and printing the bloody things, why on earth do we have a QR code that nobody reads? Just get the printing to one page, save paper.
That's a good question, and I've raised that with TicketSolve. Unfortunately, the answer is if we can remove the QR code, but if I remove the QR code, it's attached to the piece that allows you to add it to your Apple Wallet or your Google Wallet. So in losing the QR code, we lose the Apple Wallet and Google Wallet functionality.
I've got a wallet and it's in my pocket. I don't want anything electronic.
But some people do, so yeah.
The other comment I would say is
that's what we bought. We bought TicketSolve. That's how it comes. I've raised it with them. They're quite a They're quite a go-ahead company. You can raise issues with them, and they will. If a number of companies raise them, then they will deliver that change for you. So it's on their list. What we need is a number of other people to raise it, and then maybe it will get done. I don't know. The answer is I can't change it.
Sorry. One other comment, just briefly, is Joanna Scanlon put a thing out on the website, but that came up on YouTube, which is something awesome. Some platform which I have no intention of ever going on, so I wasn't able to see it.
Did you not see it on the newsletter?
It's on the newsletter, but you have to load up something else to read it. You can't read it on a browser.
Right. I saw it on a browser.
Yeah. Well, my browser won't allow it. Yeah. It's just this move to social media and AI. Is downhill.
As someone who's done a little bit of website design outside of the cinema, where it's a local campaign for Real Ale, actually, our website, and it is one these days, will work well on mobiles and desktops. What happens with the mobile, instead of having, say, your boxes on your home page, three, on the mobile it's more one after the other, but perfectly readable, so I wouldn't worry too much about that.
I'll make it a nice hard one. I'm interested in the VAT issue as a former accounts lecturer, because I remember a few years ago we were approaching the threshold and then we reduced the prices and we had lavish praise from inside Croydon for that in an inflationary period. Now, we're still quite near the threshold. So why did you decide to register rather than try and do something which was going to keep us just below it?
Strategy is to increase the number of screenings, to diversify the audience, get more people coming in to the screenings, and actually, if we were trying to sort of bugger the system, if you like, by keeping below, then it would interfere with our programming strategic objective and also our ability to attract a more diverse audience. So we felt that actually, at the end of the day, we have to pay taxes.
Mm. I would question that, though, because
we did take advice on it, to be fair, and we did get lots of very qualified accountants to tell us that actually that was the thing that we should do.
Well, it's just in the context of what you're saying, if you're trying to attract a more diverse audience, if you keep the prices down, you're more likely to attract the kind of younger people and so on that you're thinking about.
Yeah, so it was difficult, Bernard. So we ran, the threshold is 90,000. We ran very close to that for about 10, 11 months. We finally went over it. We're now well over 100,000. And we did look at it you know, we did seriously look at, can we reduce the prices? The trouble is, we don't know the impact of reducing the prices. Reducing the prices might increase the audience, and therefore you go over the limit anyway. And as Sam says, you then drive yourself slightly mad trying to adjust things to stay under. And it's a huge amount of effort. It was a huge amount of effort monitoring the VAT situation. And now, to be fair, and a lot thanks to David, who's not here, now we're on QuickBooks, now we've got the VAT. We that whole issue's gone out of the window. We can forget about that on a monthly basis. We accept we pay VAT, and we just move forward on that basis. There is a massive implication for all of us here, and we've talked about this at committee. It means that the cinema becomes, I guess, less of an amateur exercise and more something we have to take very seriously, because we're obliged to pay VAT and we're obliged to meet those targets every month now.
You made mention of the council rent business. No, it's all right. I just wanted to...
Yeah.
So that might play into the fact that you have to have money to pay whatever it is the council wants. That might cause a problem. It wasn't really a question, it was just a comment.
Yeah, let's see what nominal is, yeah.
That brings the formal proceedings to an end. So for anyone who would like to participate, we now have our fun quiz on films that were screened last year. If anyone doesn't want to stay, this is your cue to leave if you must. Not everyone, please, somebody stay and do the quiz, come on.